Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky. It's tricky. 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 Tricky.
Come to Washington. I'm currently right now in Matt Gaetz' old office. That is Rayburn 2021. We walked in, there's mouse traps all over the place and glue strips on the floor. And we've got a rodent problem. I told the team, I said, leave all those traps out. It makes this office unattractive to other members of Congress. The low guy on the totem pole can lose his office because somebody else finds it more attractive. But the other thing is we're right across from the barbershop. I talked to the speaker the other day. I said, Speaker, I don't know, is Congressman Gonzalez here yet or Congressman Carter, they leave? All right, if they're gone, I can tell y'all this.
I love this. This is Jimmy Patronis, our congressman at the military forum in Santa Rosa County. And it was kind of cute because you had a couple of other congressmen who were there. And he was like, are they gone yet? Are they gone yet? Because I don't want to say this when they're here. Of course, here I am playing it on the radio. But you hear what he said? He's got Matt Gaetz' old office, and there's rat traps and, you know, mice strips and all this other stuff that are out there to catch the rodents. And the reason why, this is so interesting, because when you come into Congress, you don't have any authority, right? You're brand new. And so people will take your stuff. Like, basically, they pillage your body after the zombies kill you is kind of how this works. And so... Not the exact metaphor, but, you know, close enough.
So I'm low man of the totem pole, and I am told, Jimmy, you will probably lose your office. Matt had some seniority, so your office will go back into the lottery. And my thought was, it's not a law, okay? It's probably just a policy. So I just start asking questions, and so I'm sitting there talking with the speaker. I can't believe I'm telling you all this story. I'm asking the speaker. I said, Speaker, can I keep my office? He said, sure, why not? He said, you shouldn't have to go back into the lottery. I said, well, some people say it has to go back in the lottery. He says, no. He says, I think it's okay. I think you can keep your office. The great thing about my office, I'm ground zero for all of our military liaisons. The Coast Guard's right next door. Everybody's right next door to me. And so we didn't get to get on House Armed Services Committee. The speaker knows I'm disappointed. And speaker says, well, great thing about your office, he says, all the branches are right around you. He says, so if we leave you there, then you can manage those relationships with them when everybody comes up from Northwest Florida because they may need to have access to their military offices. I said, that's a great argument for protecting where I'm at. So hopefully when you do come up, we'll still be in the same place. But the reason why the rat traps are out, I want to make it very unappealing to any other member of Congress that is shopping my office. So
I love that. He's, you know, it's deliberate lying in order to make people not want the office that since he's not on, it's not called military affairs. What's it called? I can't even think of the name of the committee, but it's the one that Matt was on where, you know, it's armed services. He's not on armed services and he wants to be, but there has to be a vacancy and there's no vacancy. So he likes being able to connect with all of the military branch folks who have their offices right near him. So they have to walk past his door, basically, so he gets to see them anyway. And so make the office look unappealing, paint it poorly, and then maybe he can keep it. I feel like I'm betraying him a little bit playing this on the air, but I don't think that Tony Gonzalez's people are listening to my show in Texas. But, you know, hopefully. Anyway, 437-1620. Sorry we weren't able to connect with Julio Diaz this morning. I tried calling him. He's probably at a con somewhere, you know, working out deals. That does happen every once in a while, so I apologize. Hey, what are you going to hear about in the Transgressive Memorial Service? Why does Brother Andrew like Kraft Heinz so much? Well, you'll find out coming up next. Right now, we've got Traffic on the Fives with John Pickens.
That's right. Brought to you by ECUA Bulk Waste Services. Now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still dealing with the accident that happened over in East Milton as you approach the bridge heading to downtown Milton. Again, traffic is still backed up to Ward Basin Road, so just be aware of that. The rest of I-10, I-110, even Pace and Milton are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the Fives.
Remember when washing machines were made in America, were solidly built, and actually got your clothes clean? They aren't a thing of the past. They are Speed Queen, and they are available at Tops Appliance. Speed Queen washer and dryers combine durability and technology into the best washers and dryers in the world. Speed Queen will change the way you think about washing machines. They're built to last longer and deliver exceptional wash results. Unlike many other washers and dryers with plastic parts, Speed Queen uses commercial-grade steel and porcelain components designed to give you at least 25 years of reliable, trouble-free operation. That's why they come with lifetime warranties, the best warranties in the business. See store for warranty details. Speed Queen washers and dryers are built to work and built to last. If you want durability, innovation, and perfectly done laundry the first time, then you want Speed Queen. See these great Speed Queen washers and dryers for yourself at Tops Appliance on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
Bands on the Beach happens every Tuesday night at 7, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority. Come on out with a blanket or a lawn chair and get ready to catch the vibes on the sand behind the Gulfside Pavilion. This Tuesday, it's Goldmine. Goldmine is Pensacola's own classic rock band, bringing the golden era of rock back to life. From festival stages to a brand new Nashville-produced EP, Goldmine rocks all generations. It's all happening this Tuesday night at Bands on the Beach. Just remember, no pets or glass allowed.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the word family, which the Waterloo, Ontario School Board recently identified as problematic. At the Waterloo Oxford Secondary School, Canada's equivalent of a high school A, a recent re-education seminar helped staff learn that the word family carries with it such baggage that it should really just be dropped. Under the headline, Dismantling Whiteness at WO, Words Matter, the first bullet was that family has been, quote, identified as harmful by our racialized students. In Canada, racialized is what they call a minority, which we also love because it reveals race as something imposed upon them and also avoids the condescending reference to their lack of social power as a minority. Extra well-done language kudos to you, W-O, which is obviously halfway to full W-O-K-E, praise Gaia. Part of the reason family is so problematic as a word at W-O is that it values positions of male authority and hierarchy and gives preferential social status to the heterosexual nuclear family, even by using words like intact to marginalize divorced families or separated families as suffering some kind of rupture from the marriage norm. In fact, of course, the family term is so socially loaded because it tends to exclude the single parent, the same-sex parents, the multiple parent or polyparental structures, and basically anything other than the straight, white, undivorced, sexually exclusive Christian archetype. Please. But the half-woke school district really made an even keener observation when they noted that families are authoritarian by nature, demanding obedience, imposing unjustified restrictions upon the child, only allowing questions or challenges when the parent thinks it warranted, forcing children to sublimate their personal views and desires to the will of the family, denying personal boundaries, and perpetuating a system of unchosen forced allegiance to people whose primary claim to power is they forced you to come into this world in a state of powerlessness and utter dependence upon them. The family is unjust. There's no due process. There's no privacy, let alone private property. Free speech, freedom of religion, power of protest, protection against unreasonable search and seizure, right against self-incrimination, and so many other basic human rights are not even hinted at in the basic family structure or interactions with mom. In other words, families are the monarchy. They are the tyranny. They are the white supremacy culture. And it's no wonder that people don't like to see this question. That's why the fifth core dictum of wokeness exhorts us that the revolution starts in the nursery. Fight early, fight often. So fantastic job, Ontarians, for deprioritizing this bigoted and oppressive word family. There is one bright corollary to this. Some leaders are starting to grasp how monarchio-normative the family structure is, and they're changing their use of words to fight the power. California Governor Gavin Newsom recently wished his wife of 17 years a happy birthday, but in doing so, he was an agent of change. His exact words were, quote, "Happy birthday to the first partner of California, the outstanding mother of our four children and the love of my life," end quote. Now, obviously, we would have preferred the use of the term birthing person instead of mother, and perhaps he shouldn't have marginalized the lonely by rubbing his success at second marriages in their face. But to so actively eschew the white supremacy labeling of the so-called traditional marriage crowd by referring to Jennifer Newsom, yes, she did submit to the humiliation of having a masculine name branded on her ID cards forever, not as his wife, but as his partner. What a beautiful way to denormalize marriage, delegitimize monogamy, and include all the non-traditionalists in California in his embrace of alternate intimacy structures or no intimacy structure at all. Well done, Governor, and well done, Waterloo Oxford Secondary School. Your merit badges are in the mail. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we do want to briefly acknowledge the inspiring work done last weekend at the No Kings rallies across America to distract from the 250th birthday of the United States Army, the 248th birthday of the United States flag, and the 71st anniversary of saying "In God We Trust" during that horrifically authoritarian Pledge of Allegiance. Of course, it was also the 79th birthday of Him Who We Do Not Name, and he had decided to have a military parade to indulge in the toxic masculinity of warmongering and saber-jiggling. As we all know, this man has installed himself as a king in the office of the presidency, and it was entirely appropriate to prove how much of a tyrant he is by making him allow us to protest against him in public all across America on his own birthday. The fact that these demonstrations were simply allowed to happen might seem like evidence that he isn't actually the despot we say he is, but that's just what he wants you to think. Of course, he wants you to think he's willing to let you protest. But that's just what a clever dictator does. He makes it seem like he's simply supporting the military and its sacrifices to make it possible to live in a country whose benefits are the envy of the world, with the demonstration of American pride in D.C. while we loyal opponents stand around with all the surplus wealth of a Western democracy that allows us time off and money for art supplies and an education so we can spell profanities correctly on our signs protesting him. Boy, we showed him. We definitely made our point about how totally wrong it is to hate, as we also told people how essential it is to hate him. And yes, I know, it was a little disappointing that we couldn't get more TV time for us and even less TV time for the parade, but no matter, we made our point, and the whole country listened. As Saint Obama said, that man is an autocrat. And even though none of us know what the word autocrat means, it sounds very bad. And if the one great giver of the Obama phone says it, it must be true. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's Brass Birkenstocks with One Hemp Leaf goes to Kraft Heinz and General Mills for their efforts to eliminate artificial dyes from their food products. Now, I know it's unusual for us to praise any corporation, since as anti-capitalists, we despise corporations. Unless those corporations virtue signal correctly by, for instance, sponsoring our annual Rainbow People parades and requiring employees to include preferred pronouns on name tags and email signatures. Nevertheless, in this case, the artificial virtue performance over the removal of artificial colors is pitch perfect and deserves our admiration. As both food giant conglomerates explained in their press releases, they already don't use artificial dyes very much, just 15% of General Mills products and just 10% for Kraft Heinz ones. So the big virtue message is more headline than fine print. Also, we love that in framing the decisions as the result of a long ongoing process already in the works, they avoid giving any real credit to the current Secretary of Health and Human Services, the raspiest one of all, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This in turn means that he whose name shall not be spoken does not get mentioned in any way, and certainly not positively. But there's one part of the process and the releases which concerns us. Particularly in the case of Heinz, they say that even with the banning of red dye number 3, the iconic color of their flagship brand of ketchup will not be changing, because it's already made entirely from natural ingredients found in the red tomatoes. Oh dear, Otherin, this will not do. Not only do we want to see the old ketchup take on a new color, we need it to take on a new color so we can officially perform the virtue. As Fornblatt's third edict on the artificial performance of virtue teaches, if you signal a virtue but in a society no one sees it, did it really signal? So if you use some ketchup which looks the same as before, how can anyone see what you've done? No. Without visual evidence, there can be no purification of the charade. So although we know it's unnecessary, we demand that Heinz ketchup henceforth be manufactured with an unappealing brown color. To reaffirm that this is, let's say, new Heinz, and it's really completely additive-free. It's only by pouring unsightly brown goop on our hamburgers, hot dogs, and French, not freedom fries, that we can be sure our neighbors will see our devotion to eating uncontaminated food. Furthermore, we call upon the makers of condiments, all condiments, to follow suit. Not just Heinz, but French's and Plaquemines and Goulden should all agree to stop making mustard such a vibrant yellow and consider making it also brown, without dyes. New mustard. Same for relish. Why make something so vividly green when you could have a nice, chunky, brown sludge to pour on a hot dog and prove to the world that you're willing to sacrifice visual appeal for the sake of condiments so ostentatiously liberated from their artificial colorings. Now, obviously, General Mills starts this game with a bit of an advantage for its food items. Cheerios, for example, already arrive in the box basically the same color as they eventually leave the body. Kit Kat, Corn Chex, and Pillsbury Crescent Rolls already come in various shades of brown, so not much work to be done there. But Lucky Charms, Yoplait, Trix, Totino's, Hamburger Helper, and Haagen-Dazs offer plenty of chances to decolor the world as proof of the food additive reformation. If we can live without a sharp orange Kraft mac and cheese, we can live without any food coloring at all. And yes, I understand the irony of we, the people of the rainbow, advocating against flamboyant food colors. But that's how we prove our commitment to the official dogma of incomprehensibility. So be it. In a world of fruit flavors, we should aspire to have no fruit colors, and we can finally find out what brown can do for you. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
And we've got a breaking news update just in this morning from the Florida Highway Patrol. We are learning that troopers are searching for a driver involved in a fatal hit-and-run crash. This happened about 5 o'clock this morning at East 9 Mile Road in the intersection with University Plaza. FHP says an unidentified man was struck in the crosswalk while crossing the road at 9 Mile. The suspect vehicle is a white SUV that they say was headed eastbound. The pedestrian did die from their injuries. Troopers say the SUV fled the scene, did not stop, did not attempt to render aid. Again, FHP looking for this vehicle, a white SUV with damage, they say, to the front left portion of the vehicle and a broken left headlight. If you have any information, contact the Florida Highway Patrol. You can call Star FHP.
Very good, David. Thank you so much for that update. John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
That's right. If you are in East Milton trying to get to downtown Milton, still seeing some minor delays. They've got that accident off to the side of the road, but traffic is still backed up to Ward Basin Road. So just be aware of that. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. Back to David Wayne in the newsroom for our headlines. David?
Well, the wife of Minnesota Democratic State Senator John Hoffman is now out of the hospital after suffering multiple gunshot wounds in last week's assassination attempt. Police say the suspect shot the Hoffmans in their home, then drove to the home of Democrat Representative Melissa Hortman, killed her and her husband. The foreign ministers of Britain, France, and Germany are meeting in Geneva today to search for ways to end the war between Israel and Iran. The conflict began last Friday when Israel attacked Iran in an effort to keep them from developing nuclear weapons. Iran has retaliated and returned fire at Israel. And dogs apparently will be clocking in at the offices all across the country this morning for National Take Your Dog to Work Day. I didn't know that was a thing, but I guess it is. The day is celebrated each year on the Friday after Father's Day. Studies have shown that having pets around, they say, can lower stress and boost productivity.
Nice. You know what it reminds me of, though, is do you remember I think it was a Wile E. Coyote variant where they have the sheepdog, Ralph and Fred, I think, okay, are their names, where he goes and clocks in and clocks out and he's guarding the sheep, if I'm not mistaken. And that's what it reminded me of, is the picture of the dog clocking in. So,
got you. Well, I can say that if I brought my dogs to work, it would not boost productivity one bit. But apparently some people's it would.
So. Same here. And mostly what you'd hear is barking and whining, I think, if I brought my Australian shepherds in. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. It's actually kind of funny. I'm part of these like Facebook groups, you know, how to train your Australian shepherd. And people are always, oh, I just got an Australian shepherd. She's 4 months old, and she keeps barking at strangers. What can I do? Buy a different dog. That's what you can do. That's
a little late
that's
for
the
that
breed,
one.
Baby. When I run, they always nip at me. They're born to herd. That's what they do. You know, you can do your best to train them out of it. And good luck. All right. Hey, coming up next, we're going to talk to a couple of good friends who have here in studio with me to talk about the RAP issues from the week, the Escambia County book access restrictions, the Chappie James, the welcome sign on Pensacola Beach. All that has gone away now. All the different things coming up next on the RAP.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. President Trump can keep control of California National Guard troops.
A U.S. District Court judge ruled that the president overstepped his legal authority by sending Guard troops to L.A., but a three-judge appeals court panel overturned that ruling, saying it is likely that the president lawfully exercised his statutory authority in federalizing control of the Guard.
Fox's Jill Nato in D.C. Israel's military reports strikes on dozens of military targets in Iran as missiles come back the other way. Fox's Mike Tobin in Tel Aviv.
Once again, southern Israel took a hit in the town of Beersheba, very near an apartment and an industrial complex, causing fire and damage. No reports of injuries. There are reports that this single missile made its way through the air defenses because one of the interceptors malfunctioned.
Beersheba is where a hospital took a direct hit from a missile yesterday. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is clear skies right now. We've got 79 degrees here in Pensacola. We'll get a check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. Learning this morning that the Florida Highway Patrol is investigating a fatal hit-and-run crash that happened earlier this morning, about 5 a.m., maybe just a little bit before that, on East 9 Mile Road at the intersection with University Plaza. An unidentified man was struck in the crosswalk as he was crossing 9 Mile. Seeing in a release from FHP that the suspect vehicle is a white SUV that was headed eastbound. The pedestrian did die from their injuries. Troopers say the SUV fled the scene, didn't stop, and didn't attempt to render aid or report the crash. FHP, again, looking for that vehicle, a white SUV. They say would have damage to the front left portion of the vehicle and a broken headlight. If you have any information, contact FHP or Crime Stoppers. Escambia County Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger's announced some big changes to that Pensacola Beach Gateway project after $1.5 million in state funding was cut from the project. Also, after some criticism of the proposed designs for that arch. The proposed artistic arch entrance is just being removed from the project now. They did a survey, 4,000 responses, 67% of people opposed the design that had been chosen. The revised plan does include a modern toll system, safety improvements for roads and sidewalks, and fiber installation for future smart traffic solutions on the beach. Commissioner Hoffberger says the county also does plan to seek grant funding to help cover some of the costs as they move forward with that project. Well, a man has died after being shot by deputies in Escambia County at a local Arby's restaurant yesterday afternoon. The sheriff's office said Daniel Lewis Hayes had a warrant out for his arrest. He'd been seen at an Arby's location on 98 yesterday afternoon. Deputies approached him. They say he ran inside and allegedly pushed a deputy to the ground, then pulled out a knife. Deputies say Hayes was told to drop the knife but refused and then was shot. The 37-year-old died at the scene, and deputies say that he was wanted on several charges related to a previous domestic incident. The volunteers still not giving up on finding the missing 10-year-old swimmer from Okaloosa County, or in Okaloosa County, rather. She was from Arkansas. Louisiana's United Cajun Navy was in the Gulf yesterday. They're still looking for 10-year-old Trinity Esslinger. She went missing about a week ago, swimming in East Pass in Destin. The sheriff's office had given up their portion of the search Wednesday after searching 250 square miles with no results. But 50 volunteers from the Cajun Navy continuing now to look for signs of Trinity. An official with the Cajun Navy says that they didn't find anything yesterday, but the search will continue today. ECUA is making some changes to the Bayou Marcus Boardwalk and the water reclamation facility there. News Radio's Austin Price with more.
Phase 1 of the boardwalk repairs is already complete, but phase 2 is underway, with the expected finish being sometime between July and September, depending on weather. It's being upgraded with durable Brazilian hardwood for long-term use. As for the water reclamation facility, it will enhance flood protection and meet new electrical redundancy requirements. ECUA plans to demolish open-top digester tanks and build a new electrical building while also addressing any problems with stormwater management. I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Thank you very much, Austin. And it is 8:35. John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Insect Pest and Lawn. Make your outdoor space summer ready. Get $50 off new mosquito or fire ant control service. Visit insect.net today. Still dealing with the, if you're traveling from East Milton into downtown Milton, we're still seeing traffic backed up all the way to Ward Basin Road just due to an earlier accident. Just a whole bunch of people. They've got it off to the side of the road, so just be aware of that. But other than that, I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Biggins with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 forecast.
We will have a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms as you go throughout your day today. High near 91 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 75. For Saturday, 40% chance of rain. High near 90 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 76. Keeping that rain chance around on Sunday with a 40% chance of rain and a high near 90 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 79 degrees. We've got, looks like, mostly sunny skies and a beautiful morning here in Pensacola. And your money now this morning, it is, markets are up. The Dow's up 153 points at 42,324. S&P up 29 points at 6,009. The NASDAQ up 135 points this morning at 19,681. Taking a look at our 10-year bond rate, it is up a bit at 4.417% today. Gold price is up $35.90 at $33.72. Silver up 86 cents. Crypto is up across the board. Bitcoin up over $1,500 at $105,835. Ethereum's up $44 at $25.50. Solana's up a couple bucks. Dogecoin up a fraction of a cent this morning. Taking a look at a few of our financial headlines for today. New study claims that ChatGPT may be doing more harm than good when it comes to writing. A new study from the MIT Media Lab reports that when people use AI tools to help write SAT-style essays, they consistently underperformed at neural, linguistic, and behavioral levels. And they say, in fact, over time, ChatGPT users got lazier with each essay, many times resorting to copy and paste methods. Another group was found to exhibit more brain function when writing, especially around creativity, when they did not use technological aids. President Trump extending the deadline for another TikTok sale.
The popular video sharing app's China-based owner ByteDance now has until September 17th to sell it or have it possibly banned in the U.S. This is the third time Trump has extended the deadline. Earlier this week, Trump said he believes Chinese President Xi Jinping would be willing to approve a deal to sell the app. The law banning TikTok, if it isn't sold, was passed under former President Biden. I'm Matt Mattinson.
Thank you, Matt. And nearly 260,000 Honda vehicles being recalled due to possible brake pedal issues. A report from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says the car's brake pedals could move side to side due to it not being properly staked during production. Issues affecting 2021 through 2025 Acura TLXs, 2023 to 2025 Acura MDXs, and 2023 to 2025 Honda Pilots. Also, Ford recalling 200,000 Mustang Mach-Es because of a safety issue that they say could trap people in the back seat due to a low battery charge, causing the electronic door latches to stay locked after the front doors are closed. 8:39, your next news at 9 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Everybody jump, 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 jump. the hip hop, the hibbit, the hibbit, hip hip hop, you don't stop. Rap, 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 wrap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharpen
up. Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's my opportunity to hang out with some friends and talk as if we were sitting at a coffee shop or sitting at the bar, just, you know, talking over beers or coffee. Jeremy Evans, who is the former president?
State committee man.
I can never remember
Treasurer
this.
Of the state Republican Party.
Oh, none of these words mean anything to me. That's the problem. he was a big wig in the Escambia Party, for Escambia Republican Party. Charles Thornton, I'm going to get the words right, but I still don't know what they mean. He is the Republican Executive Committee Vice Chair, right?
I am.
And welcome back to both of you, both repeat offenders here on the Wrap. Let's just start with this because I want to make sure I don't forget to say it. I was talking earlier about the beach sign and how now we're not going to get the decorative aesthetic sign that Ashley Hoffberger, you know, we had the kind of the misfire once and the public pushback and then the semi-misfire second time and public semi-pushback. And then she said, look, the governor, we don't have funding in the budget. $1.5 million is not there. And so we just can't really afford this project. They were supposed to have this on the meeting today, starting in 20 minutes, along with the $25 million John R. Jones project. But it's not going to be there. I talked with Wes Moreno earlier today, and he said they are even looking at the idea of just having something that doesn't even cross the road, something very unobtrusive. So it's going to be a slimmed down version of this, saving some money. I was talking with Alex Andrade this morning, and you know, he was saying, I'm a fan of the project. If they come back to ask for funding, I'm fine doing it again next year. Just so many projects that he couldn't keep them all during a very bizarre budget negotiation, which we'll get to. And plus, he figures anything he puts his name on gets vetoed. We'll talk about that in a second. But what do you think about this as a as an issue? It's kind of become this thing where people almost like at this point, any sign you propose, people would hate it just because it's become fashionable, I think, to hate the sign. So were you surprised that she just pulled? And she basically, she apologized. She said, I didn't communicate well. It's my fault. I'm to blame. We're going to do what the people want and kind of move on. Charles?
Well, I think it, I think it's part of a learning curve for Ashley. This is her first bump in the road,
yeah,
that I see, and she's gonna come out of it a lot stronger. But what happened is she probably did not go in and do the homework at first, which was to talk to the do that survey. Mm-hmm. The survey was done after the fact, probably should have done it prior to, and then the funding issue. I was not aware until yesterday. I was talking to another commissioner that, you know, that the funding was not there. But one of the main things was the public. Most of the people just did not like that money, the funding for that project. They felt like that money should be redirected to other projects. And she's going to come out of this stronger once she, you know, she had to backtrack. This first bump in the road.
And I admire and respect a politician who says I'm wrong and changes their mind. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
That's something you don't see enough of, frankly. So I always look good on that.
I agree with that. I think in general, like, this has been an issue that I think in our community we've had a lot. I think when we find an idea, whatever that idea is, we'll do this idea, but if we're going to give $100,000 and they're going to give $100,000, this person's going to give $500,000, and you get these very complicated funding schemes.
The Bay Center.
One of those comes out,
yeah,
the Chappie James statue,
right,
that issue, and then it kind of falls apart. Like, this is something that goes to the beach. It is beautiful. To me, this seems like it falls into TDC territory. Maybe it doesn't. Why is this not a project that the TDC wants to fully fund? Mm-hmm. And if they don't want to fully fund it, why do they not? And if they don't, is it worth going through the processes to try to find these other funding measures to do so? Because I think that I don't think anybody would say a sign over the beach is a bad sign. Now, the question is, do we want to spend the money to do it? Is a different question.
And again, it's a toll booth. I mean, it's a toll plaza slash sign, which was true but not communicated particularly well.
Yeah. And so just if it's valuable to all of those people, like the people who would like this or the people who own hotels and businesses and things on the beach, if we need more than the sign that is the iconic one, then find a way to do it, but don't have it be piecemeal funding from like 8 different sources.
Yeah. And I suspect that in this case, some people were bothered by the price. But if they had loved the visual, they would have found a way to live with the price.
Yeah.
And so the problem really was that from the beginning, it wasn't a, all right, let's take submissions. Show me your ideas. Find out what people really love. And then give them something they're going to love where they can really go like, oh, that's fantastic. You know, and then, oh, well, it costs some money. Yeah, okay. Which is, I mean, think of the Chappie James. We're in that situation, right? We got sold on a beautiful thing. I want the thing. I want the plan. I want the monument. I want the flag. I want to come in from Gulf Breeze and be like, yeah, the Chappie James Memorial Bridge. And there's the Chappie James Memorial. I don't want to be like, well, we were going to have a thing and then it fell apart. So, you know, if you get people excited about the thing, they'll fight to get the result, as opposed to if you don't do that right, and then they're going to fight you about getting the result in order to stop it. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Still no accidents to let you know about right now, but due to an earlier accident we had over in East Milton, trying to get into downtown Milton, we're still seeing delays backed up all the way to Ward Basin Road. So that's about a 10-20 minute delay at this point as they're trying to get traffic flowing again. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. Back to the wrap here with Jeremy Evans and Charles Thornton talking about the Chappie James, kind of the announcement suddenly where they've got new leadership. Chris Dosev is on the board, no longer the president. And, you know, you've got a brand new president, Cedric Alexander, and they've got to meet these financial deadlines for reporting to the city. You guys have any doubt the project will actually happen? And you sound like you think it won't happen now, Jeremy. Do you?
I think that it either the county should be 100% behind it and willing to put it forward, or the community should come together and fund it. It sounds like, again, it's one of the things that sounds like it's just the bureaucracy of it is just making it exponentially more expensive to cross a finish line. So I think they need to figure out a way to kind of try to find a way to cut some of that stuff out. But it seems like it's, again, something that everybody's like, oh, this is a good idea, but nobody wants to own getting across the finish line. They're like, I'll do my little part of things, and they won't push it all the way. And we need to get a group of leaders in a room, have them say, how do we get this accomplished? How do we get this to the finish line without causing any pain for anybody, and just do it? And sometimes we struggle with making sure everybody feels heard and validated, and we let the confusion stop us from doing anything at OLF 8 at Maritime Park.
Yeah, we bureaucracy a lot of things to death.
Yep.
We definitely do. Charles?
Well, I think one reason, and I wouldn't say this is the main reason, but personally I believe it is that project started out, I believe, around $500,000. Mm-hmm. And as of today, it has bloated up to over $1 million. Over $2 million. Yeah. And you know, everybody had jumped in at the $500,000, and I think the city disengaged. I'm not for sure. Don't quote me on this, but I believe the city had disengaged itself from the project, and the county.
They still have some money in it, if I recall correctly. There's some dispute about the TDC eligibility for the land and all. I mean, there's
okay.
The city had
and the county had committed, but it's the funding. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time when you go out to the community, we always drain from the same sources. We dip in the same well, and the same individuals out there. So I think that it has to become a priority, and that has to be a community push. And I don't really see we're not going to get the money from the states. I won't say it's dead. But I see that being kicked down the road. I just don't see it happening just right now.
It's interesting, the cost increase. It reminds me of the skate park, because the skate park was originally going to be mostly privately funded and not that expensive. And then eventually it was mostly publicly funded and very expensive. But a project that so many people were eager to have, that there was a political will to find a way. I'd like to believe this is in the same position. You know, it's something that I think everybody wants. I don't know about y'all, but when I drive down I-10 and I see the rest area in Okaloosa County, I'm like, yeah. You know, I mean, I love it, and I want one here. We don't have that anywhere here. I mean, we do at the Welcome Center on, you know, coming in from Alabama, but you know, other than that, I'd love to have that in town. You know,
and I do think that there is something that is very, in my opinion, it's very positive. This is neither positive nor negative about Chris Dosev, but sometimes somebody is attached to something and they're just a lightning rod for a little bit of controversy. And just removing that piece and putting another piece in, there may be some people who are reluctant to move forward or work with or do those kind of things that may fall away. Some of it may not even be Christos's fault, but just a different personality may help with collaboration.
By the way, I said Okaloosa. It's actually in Santa Rosa, my fault. Yeah. But, you know, I've said this a lot recently where, you know, I get along with Chris, but Chris rubs a lot of people wrong. Chris is abrasive. He's obnoxious. I think he wouldn't dispute that. He made political enemies, lots of political enemies. None of that helps when you're the spokesperson for a thing where you're trying to get public money to do it. You know, did they get Chinese inspected to death on this? Yes. You know, had there been a will to, you know, and but now we'll see what happens with him not, you know, at the helm for it. We're having a meeting this morning. Escambia County commissioners are going to do the financing for the $25 million John R. Jones AstroTurf, artificial turf for that whole field complex. I have been a giant question mark from the beginning. I didn't have much of an opinion. We did a show one time where I didn't have an opinion. I asked people, and all of these people who coach and are into youth sports, they were vehemently opposed. It seems like there's nobody in favor of this except for the like the sports tourism people and Commissioner Barry. And so why would we spend this much money to do it? I have recommended, I actually sent an email to the commissioners and said, I did the Haas Center. I asked Nicole Gieselson to put together the cheap overview, the free overview. And it didn't come back with what I thought were favorable numbers. It came back with, even if they filled it with 50 tournaments a year, 80 teams per tournament, they still don't recoup the cost of financing the project. Now, there's other value in having a project done, but that to me is a money loser, and it's being sold like it's going to be this moneymaker, and I don't think it's going to be. Okay, ask them for the $3,000 study. Before we finance a $25 million maybe on hope and dreams, let's ask for the study and see, because if it works, great. And if it looks terrible, then don't do it. Yeah, to me, but I don't know. Charles?
Well, I think this is the second big one that the Commissioner Barry threw out there. I think the first one, he had a different makeup on the board, and that was when during the internet service. He wanted to get internet out there and spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of controversy.
And then the sports complex off of Ash and Brosnahan, too. Yeah. That failed ultimately, right?
Yeah,
this
is
the makeup party,
and,
right?
And because there was a little gray area there where the person who got the contract, but because of the makeup of the board at that time. I just think that we really have to look at, I can understand wanting that project, but the project, in all cases, I think projects have to go, you have to look at the projects from the beginning to the end, who's going to do it, how they're going to do it, price comparison, a dual feel for the folks of what you're going to do. You're going to draw the people from this side of 9 miles over to the other side of 9 miles. Excellent project. I think the location it may be a challenge as well. So I just think this is one of the and I like Steve Barry. He's a good guy, but it just I think this is the second one. He may get it, but it's not a good look for the community.
He you know, one thing that's interesting to me is how many hours have we wrangled about OLF 8? And granted, that's a massive multi-tens of million dollars eventually, but over a project that, you know, $25 to $40 million range to sell. Meanwhile, John R. Jones, we have one TDC meeting, one Escambia County Commission meeting. Boom, zip, done. No questions. Don't ask questions.
And I also think that the thing that I find to be a little confusing, and there is proximity to it. You have the Ashton Brosnahan Park, which kind of has the premier field.
Right, the soccer field, right.
The one soccer field that's the premier field that the SEC has their women's soccer tournament on.
Right, it's a great
and
facility.
And so, I don't know, like it seems to me, if you're going to invest money in a park because we want to improve a park, that's one thing over here. My kid plays soccer because this is the NEP baseball field. That's the John R. Jones Park, correct?
Yep.
Those fields are not ideal. I appreciate that. But if you're spending the money that we want to create a sports tourism magnet point, it seems to me that if you have a facility that the SEC plays their women's soccer tournament at, that's where I would try to invest to create that, because you already have, when you put out your flyers, come play soccer at the place the SEC holds their soccer tournament that has some, if I was a kid, I'd be like, I'm going to go play on where they have the SEC soccer tournament. But I think they need some more space and better. Like, the one field's really nice. The other ones aren't quite as nice.
Right, of course.
And that's where Steve originally wanted to put
the indoor facility, right.
And so if you're trying to invest in that purpose, that's also something. I don't know that there's the other part about it is you're bringing all this in. There aren't a depth of great motel hotels near that
right
area.
Right there, yeah.
Where if you're traveling to it, the logistics of the travel to that space, there's not a ton of built-in infrastructure that is there. I mean, I guess there's hotels right here at I-10 in Davis, but there's not a ton of that kind of hotel bed space to support what they're talking about.
And I think the sales point was people will come here because of the beach. People will come here because it's Pensacola. They would rather come here than go to Dothan, you know, or whatever. And I get that, but the location, as you say, getting just logistically getting from the 9 Mile Fields to the beach, I mean, it's kind of a pain. It's not terrible, but it's you go west of 29, take 29 down, get over on 10 and I went to, I mean, it's not super easy. It's not super close, which is fair. Yeah. Hang on for just a second. Yeah. Let's get traffic on the 5 with John Pickens. John?
No accidents or delays to report to you right now. Everything is looking good on I-10, I-110, Highway 90 is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
My hang up on that question, though, has been more people said, why don't you just fix the drainage? You know, improve what we've got. Don't hope and dream the artificial turf solution. Just fix what we got. You could do it for a lot less than $25 million. And then we could do what they want to do just without the cost.
And I think it comes back to, like, the TDC, because TDC has this regular, pretty decent-sized pot of money that we can spend on some things.
Well, not now.
Not now. But right. But they have money they can spend on things.
Right.
Make, like, have a full meeting where you're like, okay, we have these 5 projects. This is the one we believe in. It just kind of, at times, it feels a little shotgun.
I will tell you, in my opinion, every organization in this town, other than Impact 100, does it wrong. Impact 100 does such a great job of, okay, once a year, we're going to have all these projects, all these applicants. Even if we tell you no, we're going to make your application better so that your project is stronger. Everybody else, it always seems like they come this week, they come that week. There's no comprehensive, organized process to make sure that big picture, you know, we're doing the right thing with the best use of the money all the time. It's so piecemeal or fractured or whatever that just I find that very frustrating. I wanted to ask Charles, you were at the parade yesterday. You were in the parade?
I was actually in the parade. I was throwing
you
candy
were a bead thrower, can thrower, okay,
and all kinds of trinkets and.
So this is a combo Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade delayed because of weather / Juneteenth parade. I did not go, but I heard and I saw some of the video. There was nobody there, like very poorly attended. Is that right?
I want to say to the audience, when we say nobody, that means that it was less than half, about a quarter of people.
What you would normally think of.
We would equate that to it was not fully supported by the community, as well as I think the leadership, including the churches and other organizations. Yes, some kind of way it conflicted. That was the event after that, so some people attended. But no.
The family reunion, right?
Was that? No,
that was the previous week. Sorry.
It was one, a Juneteenth thing that.
Oh, okay.
Marcia, I forget the attorney, Rafferty had something.
Got it.
Down
okay.
at one of the churches. But it wasn't. And I think the reason being is because what you done, you took an MLK parade and you inserted it into a Juneteenth. Most people are used to being off on Juneteenth. At home with their family, barbecuing, taking the days off. So folks, most people, that was the purpose of Juneteenth. It wasn't a parade day.
Yeah.
It was a day of a celebration in your own life. So, and it wasn't. I think the decision to cancel on the front end in January, I think we made the decision, no hit at anybody because we have to take precaution. But there was other areas around here that actually had parades in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we would have waited closer to the event day, I think I don't know how many days out we canceled it. We probably should have had it in January. We probably should have went on and postponed it until next year. If you're going to do a cancellation of a big event like that, I'd rather just not have it than to piecemeal it.
Too quick to answer this fairly, but we've now had 2 parades in a row that were very poor turnout. We're talking about shorter parade routes, alternate parade routes. Should we also talk about fewer parades? I mean, it's very expensive to operate these parades for the city. And I know everybody loves the one they've got, but you know, we'll see. Jeremy Evans, Charles Thornton, as always. Thank you for being here. Thanks for participating. I appreciate it, guys.
Good night.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
They're burning American and Israeli flags. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.